Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about projects on this show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about, so for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you don't plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get at is this podcast will include all kinds of spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode's topic is After We Finished Playing. After We Finished Playing is a story I published with the Cahaba River Literary Review in 2015. It's about a disillusioned young woman riding home from a kickball game with her boyfriend who refuses to grow up. They get stuck in traffic, and she has to pee very, very badly. Ultimately, she gets out of the car and pees into a cup, only for the police to pull up while she's in the act. It turns out the officer is someone the boy knows, someone he picked on in childhood. An argument ensues, and the cup of piss gets thrown on the officer, and our two main characters end up arrested. So this story came to me when I was living in Baltimore, actually pretty early on in my time there. There was a contest put on each year by the city paper there. I'm not sure if that's still going on or not. But I was still, you know, new to the area and thought, well, a story that deals directly with the local geography, local places and people and things, might stand a better chance in a contest of this ilk. So this whole situation is situated on I-95 there, and I wove in some backstory of this couple seeing an 80s band called the Leg Warmers, and this is a band that I had seen perform a number of times at the Rams Head Live bar in Baltimore, and we'll come back to that a little bit later on. In any event, the story didn't win the contest, didn't really earn any recognition in that way, but it is a story I kept working on over a period of years, kind of tinkering with here and there. I would come back to it. Again, finally did get published about probably 6 or 7 years after that initial draft. So parts of the story are loosely based on true events, or at least inspired by them. I wouldn't say it's the same story, but it definitely relates to an experience some friends of mine had. These are some friends. The woman in this relationship is very straight-laced. The man is pretty goofy. And this is a story of a time when they took a long road trip together. And, you know, I don't remember the particulars, which is probably for the best, so I wasn't really able to steal them. But in any event, they were, you know, compelled to stop at the side of the road for this woman to pee, and she ended up peeing in a big gulp cup, if I remember correctly. So when I heard this story, I remember even at the time, it occurring to me that this really reflected some of the basics of fundamental storytelling. We always talk about having characters want something. So it could be a character-driven story. The characters are acting in alignment with what they were wanting to have happen, with things they're wanting to acquire, with experiences they were hoping to have. So having this very fundamental desire, wanting to pee, is definitely an instinct, a desire that, you know, all of us can relate to from some experience or another, and gives this whole story that little narrative thrust of something, you know, very clear this character wants the whole time. Of course, you know, she wants some other things, like for her boyfriend to grow up and like for their relationship to advance to the next level. And, you know, I think she's certainly reflecting somewhat herself and wanting to kind of fully become an adult herself. But even the most immediate desire is that desire to pee. The desire to pee also kind of pulls double duty here in taking this character out of her comfort zone. We're putting her, you know, in the car, in this traffic jam. And in this situation, you know, she is kind of automatically uncomfortable, which is often a good place for characters to start, because we start to see them be tested and show their truest selves, not necessarily the version of themselves they would want to show. But so to make this into a short story, I also felt the need to add some stakes to it. And, you know, this is where, you know, parts of the story aren't necessarily as subtle as I might make them if I were to tackle it now, but I still think it has some merit to it. I had police involvement, you know, so the officer who pulls up, is there to kind of add some stakes to this story, makes it not just kind of a personal conflict, not just kind of a funny anecdote, but something these characters are going to be held accountable for. And also there's that personal connection between the police officer and the male lead in this story, which, you know, again, adds a little bit more of kind of a personal connection, adds a little bit more causality to this story. The idea that because of the guy being kind of a jerk in his younger years, and because of the way he's still kind of acting like a jerk now, He's provoking more of a conflict with this police officer character. This story, the kickball is also pretty key, although it doesn't actually appear in the story in scene at all. Again, kind of the setting is these characters are leaving from a kickball game. This is something that, you know, I may not be giving enough credit, maybe around for longer than I think, but I remember this point when I was in my mid-20s when it seemed as though all of a sudden these kickball leagues sort of sprouted up, and I had a lot of friends who were involved in different leagues there. You know, with the idea that, you know, it's something that's fun, that kind of takes us back to childhood, and that's not very serious, but still competitive and still team-oriented. So I think it offers, you know, something for everybody in terms of, you know, being kind of this athletic kind of excursion, but also kind of silly and social and getting to know people, you know, of this certain age group. It's something that I never actually personally participated in, but something that I, you know, could certainly understand why people would be involved in it. It seemed very much a fit for my generation at that time. But in this story, kickball represents, you know, all of these different factors, and it makes sense these characters would be involved in the kickball league. But it also represents sort of an arrested development for the characters, the fact that they're not moving forward. I alluded to earlier, you know, the protagonist's kind of desire to grow up and for her boyfriend to grow up, and a lot of that's embodied in this kind of absurd kickball league. So in the story, you know, the characters are coming back from this kickball game, stuck in traffic, there's the urination incident, and ultimately an arrest rooted off of it. And as the two characters are in the back of this police car, the protagonist remembers this moment they shared together at a leg warmer show, this 80s cover band. And this is a real band that I kind of pulled into the story. I actually emailed the band a copy of this story after I first wrote it. Never heard back from them, but I like to think someone from the band may have read it, and hopefully you recognize it as a little bit of a tribute to them. But this band would play, I think they still do play, throughout the mid-Atlantic, so as far down as, you know, D.C. and into, you know, Northern Virginia, and up as far north as Pennsylvania, and yeah, I saw them in Baltimore quite a few times, and traveled to them outside of Baltimore a few times as well, but, you know, when it's all said and done, probably close to 10 times over the course of my time living in Baltimore, I saw these people play. And you know, it's just a lot of fun to go see this band from another generation, and they completely ham it up with their costuming, and they still treat the music seriously, you know, and are playing pretty straight covers of this song and doing a pretty great job at just about all of them. These shows, at least for me, you know, they take you back to a simpler time. Not necessarily for society, because I think it's problematic. I know people like to idealize the 80s in some ways as being kind of this nicer time, and I think there's a lot of ugly stuff under the surface there that allowed it to appear nice for some people. But for me personally, you know, as a kid at that time, you know, it's sort of that whole wonder years effect of you don't really realize everything that's going on around you. You just remember it as a time when your life was simpler. And, you know, and when I hear this 80s music, it takes me back to, you know, being an elementary school kid riding in my father's car. And just, you know, this time when I didn't have, you know, a lot of personal things to be held responsible for. And, you know, and every new song that I heard was, you know, just expanding kind of my musical vocabulary. And, but it was pretty profound in its own right, in a way that, you know, after you live for, you know, 30 years on this planet, things start to lose some of that special quality to them, because now it's just, you know, it's another pop song. It might be one that's forgotten soon. It might be one of the few that leaks through and, you know, has some longevity to it, but, you know, you never know. So in any event, you know, this revelation of hearing the leg warmers and remembering that show at the end of this story is doing some similar things for this character. It's taking them back to a specific point in their time together when this sort of play, you know, this kickball kind of culture felt natural and not forced. It wasn't holding back their development into adulthood. It was just them enjoying being young. So, you know, I revised this story quite a few times over the years, submitted it, you know, quite a number of times, and again, was finally accepted by the fledgling Cahaba River Review. So it was really honored to have them accept that work for one of their very first issues. So that's what I have to say about the story after we finished playing. So to wrap up this podcast, I'm going to be introducing a new feature. I'm calling it Mike's Monthly Endorsement. As an artist, and some of you may identify as such too, I think it's really important to be consuming other things and to see what interests and inspires you and to see what's already out there and to see what's come before you. So I'm going to spend a few minutes at the end of these episodes moving forward, recommending a book, story, movie, TV show, a band, an album, a professional wrestling match, an old basketball game, anything that may have escaped a huge mainstream audience or maybe a little dated now and is on the cusp of being forgotten, but that I recommend. So this month's pick is 20th Century Ghosts, which is a collection of short stories by Joe Hill. This is an introduction that was introduced to me by my friend Boyd White. As some folks know at this point, Joe Hill is Stephen King's son. So like father like son, Joe Hill too became an author. And he also veers towards horror stories. But in general, I find him to have a little bit more of a literary aesthetic. While he's also fairly prolific, not quite as prolific as his father, I think kind of what he turns out, from my exposure so far at least, is a little bit more consistently strong and a little bit more a consistently literary merit. Part of what I really admire about his work is particularly in his horror stories, things often don't resolve the way you're expecting or the way you might hope for them to. He tends to avoid genre tropes and go into some really interesting spaces. And that's particularly true of this collection, 20th Century Ghosts. Hill's also, you know, pretty famous for his work on the graphic novel Lock and Key. You know, his novel Nosferatu, which is going to be, by the time this goes live, it might already be a new TV show. You know, he has his books Horns, which was made into a film. He has another book, Heart-Shaped Box. So you know, he's written a number of things that have been fairly well received. But for my experience thus far, his very best is a collection of short stories, again, 20th Century Ghosts. My favorite piece of it is this short story, Pop Art. And it's one of the few pieces from the collection that actually isn't horror at all. There are some sort of elements that are not necessarily realist, and there are some kind of horrific things that happen in it, but at heart it's much more a coming of age story. And I will not spoil anything about this collection or this story, because that's not necessarily why you tune into this podcast, and I'm recommending you check this out to make sure you get a chance to read it. But without spoiling too much, this story, Pop Art, is about two boys who are young teenagers, and one of them is an inflatable boy. And kind of everything that follows from that, it's sort of just accepted in the story. That's how this character is. No explanation needed. And I think it's a pretty cool conceit for a story and leads to some really interesting things, both on a literal level happening in the story and also on a metaphorical level for what all of that might represent. Okay, so I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope you will check back again. As always, I want to give special thanks to Mike Peake for providing the theme music for this show. I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity, and I'll catch you next time.